Jeremy Stacy, Steve Ferroni, Nate Wood, Anton Figg, I think the best drummer Kiss ever had. Come at me. Lee Sklar. These episodes and more you're going to get only on Patreon. Get the back catalog, get the whole archive, episodes 1 through 150. Patreon.com/IHTPod, IHTPOD. Join, support the show, get access to the back catalog. It's a really good deal. Do me a favor, head on over to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, leave a review. Rate the show, leave a review. It helps out the algorithms. And remember, you can follow us on Instagram and X. Username on both, IHTPod, IHTPOD. Thank you. I'm in Nashville with Billy Freeman. Billy, thank you for coming over today, man.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, so hold on. We were just joking around about my opening line. I said, hold on, let's save it while we're rolling tape. Where are you from, Billy?
I grew up in Garland, Texas.
Garland, Texas, man. All right. See, I'm living in Austin, Texas now.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, you knew that?
Yeah, yep.
Yeah, I love Texas.
Yeah, yeah, it's great, man.
Well, you got out, though.
Yeah, I've been gone like 10 years, so it's changed quite a bit. And I still haven't been to the Franklin barbecue place, though. That sounds like it's the...
Oh.
The spot.
Yes. I haven't been there either, I'll be honest with you. It just hasn't worked out. Like, it's just...
there's always a line, and...
There's always a line, and it's just that thing where I go, well, I'm here now, I'll get there. There's time, and then, of course...
Yeah.
I've been there like a year and a half, and I haven't gotten there.
Yeah, yeah.
But, you know, you gotta leave something to do.
Yeah.
I don't want to do everything, but do you ever go back to Texas?
Yeah, so my wife is from Arlington, which is a 30, 45 minute drive from where I grew up. So we go back a couple times a year, and I'll be driving back probably for Christmas.
Ooh, fun.
Yeah.
So is that 10, 12 hours?
12 hours with a 6-year-old.
Ooh, yeah.
I'm doing like 10 and a half by myself.
Yeah, yeah. Love it. Arlington, so lots of Rangers games?
Rangers games, Cowboys games.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got the amusement park there too, Six Flags.
Right on.
So yeah, she's right in the middle of all that.
But and you though, you said you grew up close to all that, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
So same for you? You did?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't care about the Rangers. I don't know. That's okay.
I went to opening day at the old new ballpark. Mm-hmm. They just got rid of that, and they got a new one now. And but yeah, I mean, Cowboys, I grew up with them winning a lot.
That's right.
So it's been, you know.
It's like a religion there, isn't it?
Yeah, it's, you know. Yeah, in the 90s, I just kind of thought they just win all the time. That's cool.
That's all we do.
And then it just never happened again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but, you know, not being there for the last 10 years, it's like, it's harder to follow. It's super easy to follow when you're living in Dallas and that's all they talk about. But, like, now that I have to make an effort to follow the Cowboys, I don't really follow them as much as I did when I was living there.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So,
obviously, growing up there, it's like, man, the country music is just... it's just in ya. You just... Yeah. There's no getting away.
So, in Garland, there was an Opry House. It's called the Garland... There was a whole Garland Country Music Association. And they had a property that they built out into, like, a small Opry House where they could have 175 people and put on a show every Saturday night. So I grew up with my parents doing that, and they were in different bands, and so I grew up kind of wanting to do that, and they would get me up to sit in. I started playing at 4, started taking lessons at 5, and then just would sit in when I could when they would play gigs out, and then turned 12 and started, like, the drummer that was there, this is how connected this whole group is. If you've ever heard of Granger Smith, he's like a country music singer. He got his start singing at that Opry. and he went to school at Garland High School. So his buddy and the guy that is his tour manager now was a drummer when I was growing up. So that guy moved to Nashville when he graduated high school, and I was several years younger, 11, 12 years old. I ended up getting a gig, being the house band drummer for that thing. Since my parents went every weekend, I just rode with them, and then we had a rehearsal on Wednesday nights, and then a rehearsal Saturday afternoon before the show, and then we'd play a show every Saturday night with 10 or 12 guest singers that would all sing a couple of songs apiece. So it was just every week learning new songs, and like from a pretty young age. And Chris and Granger came out here to Nashville and kind of started doing their thing. And then, you know, coming up in that scene was like the perfect situation for a drummer trying to get work, because, you know, I turned 18, been doing that gig for 6 years, and I knew all these singers that would love to have a band, you know. So I would always, I had my clique of buddies, and anytime a singer would hit me up wanting to play a gig, mm-hmm. I'd call my buddies and say, hey, look, you know, I got a gig, let's go do this thing. And it worked its way down to like 5 or 8 different singers that I worked with a lot in town, and led to me MDing a gig at a honky tonk there, Cowboys Dance Hall. It's like a big deal in Texas. And they have a house band that plays 4 nights a week. And so I ended up moving on to that, you know. And it was kind of like, I feel fortunate to have grown up then, because I didn't have, my goals didn't include trying to tour or anything like that. I wanted to play drums for the Opry, the local Opry, because that's all I knew about. Of course I was like into modern drummer and that sort of thing, but that wasn't realistic to me. I grew up and I was like, I want to play at the honky tonk, which is, I mean, it was a killer scene for 20 something, you know, playing a bar every night. That was like my jam.
Making money.
Yeah. I didn't have, well, and the main thing is like, I had had several years of playing with all those different singers, trying to put my months together, you know, on who I'm working with and how it's gonna shape up. And I get the Cowboys thing, it was like, oh, I don't have to worry about that now. And then I could kind of focus more on like the fun stuff that I wanted to play outside of the country thing.
Like what?
Well, man, it was so, that area is so close to North Texas that there are a lot of music students, yeah, you know, in that area. And that was always my thing. Like, I was real big into going to the jams in Dallas, and there are a lot of like really great jazz jams going on. So that whole time I was playing a lot of country gigs, but during the week, Monday and Tuesday nights, Sput, Robert Searight, you know, he had a jam going on at this place called Teeny Bar. And then Jason Thomas, he had another one that was going on a different night. And I mean, these dudes, just some of the best drummers you can go see. And so yeah, just being a part of that scene, I wanted to try and start playing with those dudes, or, you know, be a part of that. Cause like I was mainly involved in the country scene, and I started getting good work with the guys that were, you know, 20 years older than me. And it was actually a lot of the guys that had toured with Leanne Rimes, because she came up in that same, she grew up singing at the Garland Opry. That was one of the first places she, so a lot of these dudes that were part of that circle, she ended up taking out on the road for the first part of her career. Then these guys came back, and in my eyes, like, they were superstars, because I'd seen them on The Tonight Show and all this, you know. So I wanted to play with those guys. And, yeah, man, sometime out of high school, I had, our high school jazz band had done a recording session at the end of the year to just kind of, you know, do the three songs we'd been working on for contests. And I'd been to the studio before. My dad had recorded something there and took me along with him. He laid down some piano for a guitar player's record. So, man, all back then I printed out, I'd had a bunch of business cards made. I was just trying to, like, you know, do my thing. And I drove out to the studio and went and talked to the owner. I was like, man, I know I'm at the bottom of your list, but, you know, here's my card, and, you know, I'm a drummer. And he's like, oh, cool. You know, was real nice about it. And then I was like, man, I need to get some of these guys that I've met at these jams, and I'll just, it's an investment. I'll pay them to come out. I'll pay for the studio time just to get us in there and just to get myself in there. And so this guy can see me play some. And, so I did, I brought him in. We did three songs and then it worked. I ended up getting calls. Someone got sick some morning and he called, just like today with the interview today. I showed up, you know, he called, hey, can you be there? Yeah. And man, it started a deal where I was recording there all the time with new artists. So that, along with the playing with the singers and the Cowboys thing and church gigs, and one of these singers I worked with ended up getting a job being a product specialist for Chevy. And she was going around standing up on, you know, with the Chevy truck spouting out specs, you know, at the auto shows. And they had the idea of, like, well, let's set her up a stage with a band, and they can do a 15-minute set at the top of every hour, and she can spit out specs in between songs and answer any questions these people have while she's up there. And so we did that for, like, 10 years. All the NASCAR races, they would set up a little thing for us, and it was actually us and Ricky Rackman. What? Yeah. Which was, like, really weird. But he's a big NASCAR fan. And it had a podcast called Racing Rocks. I don't know if he still has it, but he's very into that world. And so I met him there. He would kind of warm the crowd up and do a, you know, trivia kind of deal before we would play our sets. And we did that for years and years. And that kind of led to... It was after that that I settled into the Cowboys Dance Hall thing and started meeting touring acts that came through there, and met Neil McCoy and started touring with him out of there, out of Texas, because he's a Texas guy. Started meeting touring people, and everybody assumes you're from Nashville when you're out doing that thing, and you don't want to tell them you're not. And so that's, like, a big thing on the show, I guess. But, yeah, so I had to make the move pretty quick. So it was within a year of starting with Neil McCoy that I started looking at moving here.
Was the rest of the band living in Texas or Nashville?
It was split. There were two guys from Texas, myself and Tommy Nash, which was just a great guitar player from Texas, that I knew him from playing with the Dixie Chicks when they were in their heyday. And then the bass player was from California. He was flying in everywhere doing all the gigs. And then the other two guys were from Nashville. And,
did you work it out with them at all? Did you talk to them, like, hey, where can I...
Yeah, about where to look. And then I had another buddy in Texas with me that was also wanting to make the move. So we just started taking trips to Nashville. And we had, with Neil, I would have days off on the road. And sometimes they were in Nashville. So I would just, like, make an effort to go out and figure out what kind of area. Man, and the timing worked out with... the gig I'm on now with Dustin Lynch, he met me at Cowboys partying one night, and he loved the band, wanted to recruit all of us. It didn't work out for me at the time, but he ended up taking the piano player and guitar player, and they started with him with him in the really early stages. And his drummer ended up quitting. So my buddy called and said, hey man, you know, you have an opportunity here. This gig's out of Nashville. And it was the month that my lease was up in Texas. I was like, man, this is perfect. So I ended up auditioning. It was like a cattle call thing here in town. And but got it and just started living here immediately. And we started touring right away. At that point in his career, he was doing 200 plus shows a year. So it was like just crazy amount of shows. And because it was like a radio tour and actual shows, so I was out to, half of it was on Cajon and that kind of thing. So I just, the first gap we had of like 3 days, I flew into Dallas and then drove a U-Haul up with my stuff and put it all in my buddy's living room for like a month until I found a place. I just lived in a Country Inn and Suites for a month.
Right.
And
just figure it out. That's what we were talking about just before we're on tape. Show up, man.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, and it's funny how it just, things will work out if you just show up. You know? I mean, that's the, and it's funny because people always want to ask how you did it. How'd you get that gig? Or how'd you, and it's like, man, no two stories are going to be the same, but the moral of the story is to show up. Yeah. Just, I always talk about like buying lottery tickets. Like everything you do in this business is, when you go out and do those sorts, when you show up, you know, it's another connection made or another, you know.
I mean, look, you had the business cards printed up. And right, and you can look, you can laugh now. You can, you know, you can look back and go, oh, I was so, you know, how naive is that and all that. And that's great. And because sometimes that like that kind of ignorance is such a plus, right?
Yeah.
Like to show up in a new city. Mm-hmm. That does take balls, and like maybe sometimes it does take being young and like dumb and all that. But it's part of it, like you said, like he's just showing up and putting the faith. Well, but again, having done the work, but we'll get back to that. So obviously, yeah, once you got here and you scored this gig, as soon as you get here, I guess, there's no looking back, is there?
It's just, no.
At that point, it's like, well, here we go.
Yeah.
Well,
and you know, that's what made me really nervous. That's the thing. Like, a lot of people saw it as like, oh, you had it made. But in my eyes, the whole time I've been here, and now I feel a little more comfortable. But for a long time, it was like, yeah, I just moved here with this gig. But, like, I'm always gone doing this gig. So when I get fired from this gig, I'm just here. And I haven't met anyone. I haven't done anything.
That's what I was going to ask you. I mean, exactly. You get that gig, and then you're home and stuff. It's like, so does that mean you're like, now I have to play out in town?
Man, yeah. I mean, that was always my attitude, because I kind of grew up playing a ton of gigs with a bunch of people. So, like, to only do this one thing, not only am I concerned, like, financially, but, like, I need another outlet, like, than playing exactly the gig, which I can stretch on the one I have now, but still, you want to go play other kinds of music, and, you know, or at least, you know, I like to, you know, if I can. And so I wanted to start playing on Broadway and just have my foot in that world and know some guys and start creating a group that I like to play with down there, because, I mean, it's definitely, it can be fun, you know, when it's with the right people. But that was a huge concern first moving to town. But it was our mutual friend Kevin Murphy that was actually one of the first things that like kind of sparked the want to move more quickly than I had, you know, initially thought. While I was on the Neil McCoy gig, I met him on a cruise, like a country cruise. He was with Randy Houser, and we just partied. I mean, it was just a, it was a long time ago. It was a good time. And I had a buddy of mine that I met. He's a drummer that went to North Texas, and, you know, I met him while he was in school. And he ended up moving to Nashville. And he sent me a Facebook message one night, and he was like, man, I'm at this bar in Nashville, and, like, Kevin Murphy's talking you up to a bunch of really big drummers in town. Like, you should probably consider moving out here. Like, and I just, like, I was blown away, and, like, well, holy shit. And then it just kind of, like, you know, hammer over the head, like, yeah, why the fuck aren't you out there in the first place? Like, you should probably go out there with all these other people. And so, yeah, that lit a fire, and to start, like, okay, I need to start going and looking, you know. It was so, man, and every step along the way, too, Kevin has just been a great cheerleader. And not only that, but, like, an inspiration on, like, how to play your gig, you know. And I always joke with him, I'm like, man, I never got to see Bonham play, but watching you's pretty close. Because, man, it's just like that dude's aura when he comes out and sits behind the kit. It's like there's something to learn from that from young guys. Like, and it's not all about, like, it has nothing to do with, you know, him going out there and blowing over the gig or whatever. It's just, nah, man, every note he plays rules, and he owns it. And so, yeah, it was cool coming to town to, like, and already have that connection with a dude like that. And just see how it should be done at this level, you know, because, you know, you don't always get to see that.
No.
Yeah.
No, and you, it's good. I mean, it's key to have a mentor.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. And to find, and it took, you know, probably 2 or 3 years of living in town before I found the clique of guys that now we have a text thread of like 11 or 12 of us that are all on there. And it's just, you know, it would be like every Sunday when we would all get home from the road, we would meet and have brunch somewhere, and everybody just fucking vent about what happened, you know, the weekend before or whatever. And, man, just to have that feeling of, like, camaraderie, you know, and find your group of people, that definitely, like, changed what it was about to live here for me. It was different the first few years, because it, coming from Dallas, you know, it's a big place, but it feels like a small musician community. And moving out here, you don't know anybody, you know. For me, it was drummers, you know, because the really that community is unlike no other.
I was just going to say, you've ever heard of guitar players who do that?
Nah, yeah, that's the thing. I mean, and it's really great. I mean, COVID interrupted that, but we were, I mean, it seemed like 2 or 3 times a week we would get together, and 5 or 6 of us would have lunch, you know, just whoever could come, you know. Yeah.
Whoever's not afraid.
Yeah, exactly.
Come on out.
So what, you've been on a little hiatus, right?
A little bit.
Yeah?
Not my first.
Yeah. I feel honored to be part of the resurgence here.
Yeah, man. I mean, I appreciate that.
Yeah.
And it's good to be here. Like I was telling you, like, I had the opportunity to be here in town and to really dig in.
So you going to the drum show?
No. In fact, the Nashville drum show is this coming weekend. And I didn't even know. I had looked at the calendar, and this was the week that worked for me.
Uh-huh.
And then having this spot to be, uh-huh, which was a gift.
Sure.
You know, and so it was an opportunity, and then so many guys were going to be available.
Yeah.
And it just was like, well, let's go. Let's do it. This is it. This is the moment.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
You don't think anymore. You just get the plane ticket and you go.
Yeah.
And so it was the right time. But I'm leaving Saturday, which is, I guess, the first day of the drum show.
Yeah.
But it's funny. I was there, I think, maybe 10 years ago. Because okay. I started the podcast, I think, March of 2012. So it was either that wow. year.
Yeah.
Or the next year, because I remember Carlock playing in a like an indoor, almost like a cross between like a bull, you know, a bullfight vibe seating, or like an airplane hangar vibe.
Oh, okay, yeah,
you know the space I'm talking about.
And yeah,
like, it's the seating, and it was like in there, you know.
Okay.
That's my memory. Okay, it's like
wow.
It's been 10-11 years. Like I said, it's very hazy. I'm yeah. like the worst, witness for like police. I mean, it's like, what color was the car? I'm like, I don't know, man.
Yeah,
no. Like this happened 10 minutes. I don't. I wasn't looking at that, you know. So that's my memory. But yeah, Carlock, and yeah, you know, so. You're gonna go? Are you doing a thing at this?
No, I didn't even realize, and we can never really count on being off, unless it's like 3 weeks out. I feel like, so I never try and really count on anything unless it's like a family vacation that I, you know, really want to do. But even those, man, I've had to like leave in the middle of because a gig popped up. And then go back to it and
right.
that sort of thing.
Right.
That happens. But yeah, man. I mean, it just, it worked out. So I'm glad to do that. I'm trying to get to PASIC this year, too. I would love to go. It's been way over 10 years since I've been to one
Oof.
Of those.
So, Oof. Yeah. Well, what's the, why am I blanking on the other one?
NAMM?
NAMM.
Yeah.
Oof. Oof.
No.
You ever do that?
No, I haven't. I was kind of there because Ludwig put me on a stand-up thing 1 year. It was like, I think it was 2019. Or no, it may have been 2020 before everything happened.
A stand-up thing? What are you...
Yeah, well, like a poster display.
Oh, right.
So I was there, but I wasn't.
Interesting.
I wasn't there.
Interesting.
But I've always wanted to go. But that's the thing, man. I wanted to go to NAMM before NAMM turned into
NAMM.
Yeah, I mean, but there were. That's my generation. We grew up seeing things that once we grew up and were old enough to do them, they don't exist like they did when we were kids. You know. Right. So.
Well, that goes for
anything.
Yeah, yeah.
But it just, I wanted to be an '80s drummer, and it just it couldn't happen.
Who were the guys you love? tell me about the guys you love from the '80s.
Oh man, you know, when I first started playing, it was like, which is weird, I was introduced to Little Feat really early. So Richie Hayward was like my guy, which isn't like an 80s guy. But then like Tommy Lee, because like I thought, I mean,
fuck
Motley
yeah.
Crue was like
fuck
the coolest
yeah,
looking thing in the world. And seeing that, you know, the Girls, Girls, Girls video, like, all their, I mean, dude, that was, you know, I had the Dr. Feelgood record, and I just, like, that was one of the ones that I just stick the tape in and have my jam box, like, right behind my head on my windowsill and just, you know.
Dude, best drummer in that genre.
Yeah. I mean.
Of that time. Let's just, do I have to, like, encapsulate, you know, people arguing at the, like, come on, bro. Like,
yeah.
Tommy Lee.
Yeah.
Like, in that genre, that music, that style.
Yeah.
I don't know. Go name better. I don't know. Bobby Blotzer? Who are you going with? Like,
yeah, it was just right on for what it needed to be. I mean, everything. It was so great.
Memorable fills, part of the song.
Yeah. The biggest thing.
Him and Mick Mars. Like,
yeah. Yeah.
All the memorable hooks.
Oh, yeah. Just...
By the way, your shirt, that's a Steely Dan shirt, but that's Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Right. It says, I'm a fool to do your dirty work. It's Tony Soprano behind the wheel of a car.
But
it says Steely Dan. I thought...
Hey, man.
I like
if
it.
Are you a Sopranos fan?
Love big time.
Yeah. There's a scene where he's singing that. And this is from that scene.
Oh,
he's
yeah.
like singing in his car.
Well, he's always got the classic rock on. That's the thing.
So there's an Instagram page called Double Wonderful, and the dude makes Steely Dan shirts and Steely Dan swag.
Oh.
And shit from, like, that era. Are you familiar with Pages? It's like before Mr. Mister. There was a group called Pages. And it's one of Vinny's first recording sessions where he, like, stepped away from Zappa.
No, I don't know about Pages. Okay. I'm not a Zappa guy.
This isn't anything like Zappa. This is
Vinny.
It's Vinny, and it has Jeff Beck's on the record too. Or not Jeff Beck, Jeff Carl. Jeff Carl's on it with Vinny, and I think Neil Steubenhaus on bass. But it's like the LA dudes. It's like yacht rock at its best. It's just the best.
I don't know this. How do I not know this? Well, who else is in it? Who's on vocals?
It's the
No.
Yeah,
no phones.
I can't.
No phones.
Something Page.
Jimmy Page.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Page.
All right, go with that. Just say Jimmy Page.
Yeah, it's Jimmy Page singing, and then Robert Plant must have taken the day off. But it's a duo, and I was never big into Mr. Mister, so.
And that's why Pages. That's where it comes from. The guy's name.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And
all right. Again, when people are again screaming,
yeah,
like dude, they're gonna fucking be, idiot.
Yeah,
why are you?
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
and man, to be honest, like I wasn't hip to it.
I meant yelling at me, but not you.
No.
They're yelling at me. Like, dude, why don't you know this?
Yeah.
I know.
No, it you know, I got.
I was sick that day. I don't know what to tell you.
Exactly.
So who played drums again? You're saying Vinny and Jeff.
Vinny, Jeff.
So who are your? So back to your '80s guys. Tommy Lee.
Tommy Lee. Man, I mean, everything that was.
Tony Thompson.
Rod Morgenstein. Yeah,
Via Winger or via what was it? Oh, the other thing. Talk about going blank.
Dregs.
Thank you. Yes. The Dixie Dregs.
And see, yeah, man, like the more Dregs because I was super into Steve Morse. The guy that taught me drums was like somehow got into Steve Morse solo records.
Right.
So like Steve Morse Band was like way up.
Yeah.
Top for me.
Yeah.
And so Van Romain was playing drums on that stuff. Dave LaRue on bass. And yeah, so like I was just really into that. And that was like, I think that was like the first instrumental music that I heard and was like, holy shit, why isn't everything like this? And it took forever for me to like find more of that. Because this was like, I would call the record shop and, hey, do you have this? And we don't, you know, we can get it in or whatever. So I just always call and call and call and finally started. I think I bought a cassette first, but then it like CDs came out. I started buying Steve Morse Band CDs and but yeah, man, Dregs were huge part of that. But that was probably the extent of the. I mean, Dream Theater. I was a big Dream Theater fan.
I was also just going to say, so you're a double bass guy.
Yeah, I mean,
that's okay. It's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I am.
Okay. You're in a safe place. We can talk about it.
Like
you had to be You had to.
Oh yeah. I mean,
come on.
But
how are you gonna play Livewire if you don't have a double? What'd you start with? Double pedal?
Oh yeah. I started out with.
Yeah.
Well, I mean. I think it was a Tama, the first one that I had. I've had every different kind of double pedal, I think.
Did you ever get double kick? Did you ever do it? Did you get two bass drums?
So, the kit that I learned on, the guy had a double bass Pearl Export, white, and it was... But I remember thinking, it's so weird as a kid when I was there taking lessons, you know, he's teaching me how to play... And it was there. And I mean, as a 5-year-old, my legs were probably as spread as they can be. And I'm, you know, and I remember on the tippy toes, that's probably why I play heel up, is because I was always reaching for them. But I always felt like it was like, don't put your left foot over. Like, you're not supposed to touch that. Like, it's not what he's showing you how to do. So, like,
right.
So I remember the first time I just let loose with like a, I just thought it was the coolest fucking thing. And that was on some of those Steve Morse Band records. He loved that, you know. And so
I still think of it as the Iron Maiden, but that's just me.
Yeah, right.
That kind of, right? I don't know. It's just I'll always forever associate it with that. I don't know. And that wasn't even double bass.
Yeah, no. Just big.
Just Nico.
Blow up airplane.
Totally, man. Nico, just fucking.
Love it.
Do you have to say Nico or is it Nico?
I would assume Nico.
Right. Why it always comes out Nico. Yeah. Isn't that interesting? Anyway, yeah.
Yeah, I saw them at Bridgestone with a buddy.
I've never seen Maiden. That's one I gotta tick off, man.
It was another one of those be there things. He called me like the night of. I was like, hey, I need somebody to go.
Yeah.
I'll be there. But yeah, man. I was big into...
You're a metal guy. You're a metal guy, too. Well, I mean, no.
Yeah.
I mean, it's in you. You're a lot of things. In other words, you're not one thing. I get that. But you're not a country guy. You're not a... It's like you're not...
I was big into anything that, like... So, one of the guys that taught me a little later down the line when I was kind of ready to start reading a little, every time I would show up, he would send me home with a VHS, a different one. And... So we had like the Buddy Rich Memorial stuff, the brain, you know, instructional thing, the
with the bucket head and the chicken coop.
And I mean all of those old classic videos, like the Dennis Chambers thing,
Hot Licks stuff,
you know,
yeah, Tommy Aldridge,
yeah, all that stuff. Well, and man, so.
That's still the best. That's still my... I don't know. That was something about that era. Tommy Aldridge on that.
So...
Your left foot's like gay, he said. Talking about double bass. He's like, you know, you gotta get it.
Gay-ity.
Like, cancel Tommy Aldridge. How dare he speak like that?
So...
Fucking love it.
The Cowboys Club I played at was in Arlington.
Okay.
And that's where the other Vinny Paul... That's
where those Texas Vinny.
Yeah, Texas Vinny. And so... They used to come out, or Vinny used to come out to ladies' night with his crew all the time. And dude, he would just post up right next to me and hang out every Wednesday night. He'd be there. And so then, after a few nights, our keyboard player kind of like made a love connection and was like, dude, you need to go over there. Because I never wanted to like be that guy. I'm terrible about that, and it could be construed as me being an asshole, and it never is. It's just I never assume, even if I've met somebody before or whatever, it's like they're not going to remember who I am, you know.
Well, also, hold on, if I may, I mean, it sounds like it also could have been a thing of like for you at the time, you're like, that's Vinny fucking Paul.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, he's just too much of a like demigod. You're like, I can't. I can't. And, I can't even do it.
So.
Like, it's that level.
Yeah. And we ended up talking one night.
Becoming friends? And
yeah. So we exchanged numbers, and man, we actually, like, became friends. We're like, he would text me all the time, and we talked about different shit. Like, Tommy Aldridge is what reminded me of it. Because I used to ask him about the, his little right foot, you know, he has the... And he's like, yeah, man, it's just a Tommy Aldridge thing. And yeah, because I would try and alternate it and play it, you know. And he's like, no, man, it's just a right foot. And he's like, man, just practice it. You'll get it, man. But he would take the time to talk about that stuff and, like, just weren't a big deal to him. It's like, dude, you have no idea how iconic that is and how many times I've listened to it and to try and make it feel like you make it feel. And he's like, ah, man, you'll get it. It's just a Tommy Aldridge thing. Okay. But he was that dude. I think at the time I was wearing like a golden drumstick necklace. And he had the same one. And
you don't see those anymore, except Styx Jenkins rocks it, but I don't know anyone else. I don't know anyone
Styx
else.
Styx Jenkins, I can talk about that too. But Yeah, man, he ended up, we got into a text conversation about it, and he was like, man, I noticed that, and our mothers had both gotten it for us. It was just a random thing. He's like, yeah, my mom got me that. I was like, well, my mom got me that too. He's like, yeah. He goes, it's funny because people are always asking me if they're scissors, if I fucking cut hair. He's like, it's bullshit. And it's funny because it's the way mine were too. I used to get that question.
That's like, actually really funny though, in his case specifically, because he actually would have looked like some kind of rock star hair person. You know what I mean? Yes. Like, that makes actually, it's, I'm cracking up just because that actually makes sense. A guy would walk around looking like that, like, yeah, I do hair. You know, like, I work with a lot of Hollywood. So, you know what I mean? It's, I fucking love that actually. Vinnie Paul, the look as the hairstylist. Brilliant. That actually makes sense. Yeah.
I know. I have an old phone that has our text thread.
But that's the thing. Like, he was really, like, he was the kind of guy, he lived it.
Yeah, man.
And he owned strip clubs or just one?
Only one that I knew of.
And you were there?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, God, I was going to say, come on, yeah, bro. Like, if you got to know him, you got sucked into the lifestyle.
I ended up being in a band that was signed to Big Vin, his label. It was called Hillbilly Orchestra. That was like, I was in it for like the tail end of its existence and was kind of like a hired gun for it, but I fucking wore the overalls and did the deal, and it was only, hell yeah, Bubba. You know, the singer was just a huge hillbilly. Yeah.
So he handpicked you, or you were in a band and he was like, I'll put you guys on?
It was buddies of mine that grew up in Garland that he was very into local.
So Vinny was like, I want to help you.
Yeah.
And I'm going to put you guys on the label, mm-hmm. basically.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, what a...
Yeah, man.
What a dude.
Yeah,
for sure. Wait a minute. So that's what I'm saying. Like, you got to hang. Like, you were at the strip, like, shit like that. Like, where you're just... Yeah.
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 I mean...
Yeah. He had the best ganja. What did he have? Like, had the best of everything? Like, what are we talking here? Like...
Man, I never got to... I was always the guy to, like, hey, come smoke with me. That's kind of been...
Yeah.
Just my deal. Well, and you know, working at Cowboys in Arlington, man, it was just... It's...
Did you bring any today?
Yeah.
You brought enough for the class?
Oh, yeah.
Excellent. You are a good man.
Yeah. Right. You know what? I wanted to, not to be rude and bust my phone out, but I took this picture for you this morning.
Oh, nice. I'd love to see it.
This happened because of Styx Jenkins. Because... I was, you know, a fan of the podcast, and he's very critical of coffee and bagels, mm-hmm. anything like that. So I forget which one it was. He's been on several times, but...
Well, Styx Jenkins has only been on once.
I apologize.
You must be talking about a different guy.
I am.
Zach Danziger.
Yeah.
I know who you're talking about. The coffee guy.
Yes.
Yeah.
You guys were talking about Australia.
Oh, right.
And I happened to listen to that right before we took a trip there. And Kevin was actually there, too. We were on the same
A flat thing. White, this, right, that. That
yes.
That,
that, all so that. Yeah. I did
yeah.
a flat white tour of right. Australia, and it kind of, like, kicked off the
well, it got you the bug. Now you're a coffee guy.
Man, and that was always, like... I was like, I'm not going to get nerdy about this. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to get nerdy about this. And then his management or like bus company bought Dustin a gift for however many years he had, you know, been leasing from them. And they bought him a fucking Breville Oracle Touch, which is like a $5,000 machine or $3,000 or $5,000, somewhere around that.
It's the real deal.
Yeah. And I'm like, all right, I'm not going to get weird about it, but I mean, I got to dial it in, I guess, to, you know, get it at least decent. And then you start like, all right, well, I got to learn some stuff to do that. And then you're there.
Yeah.
And then I start looking at like, all right, what can I justify buying? I ended up buying a lesser thing, but still, you know, learn how to grind everything. And
you know. Got your grinder. Look, see, can you see in there, by the way? Can you see what's in there?
Ah, yes.
That's how I
got you.
Okay, that's how I roll.
Traveling, I think you don't get any better than that, right?
That's the thing. Folks, it's the Bialetti Mocha Pot. This episode is brought to you by Bialetti. made in Italy, except for substitutes.
Yeah.
The Mocha Pot, I'm a big fan. It's, now technically you might know this, to be an espresso, it's about the bars of pressure.
Copy. Okay.
Like in the heat, right?
Sure.
So only the machine can do that.
Okay.
The Mocha Pot can't quite reach, but it's like just
under the right pressure.
Yeah. Okay. So it's technically not an espresso.
Okay.
But you're like,
yeah,
like you, you're like on the border of Kentucky.
Yeah, exactly.
We're on the border. We're on the border. We are. And so,
yeah.
And you get the right beans and you grind.
That's
and all
the
that.
Whole thing. Yeah.
That's the whole thing. Yeah. So I'm all about the Mocha Pot. I don't have the machine, but you've gone in.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I, you know, learned how to froth the milk and man, it was.
So that's you, that picture, you did that.
Yeah.
And you did the latte art.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
My man knows what he's doing, folks. I mean, you can't see it, but that was real art. Because when you show me the picture, it's like a picture and there's like latte art. I thought,
that's
you.
Yes, yes.
My friends, this guy, he does his work.
I mean, I went in.
You
a
went in.
Bit.
But that's what I mean. See, we're all obsessive.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's the thing. Like, you have to be.
Yeah.
To get into an instrument. Like, you have to have like that little touch of like.
Well, I think you need new things because I, you know, to be fair, like, I can't. I've heard Todd Zuckerman talk about. Someone asked him at the clinic here in Nashville what he does about burnout. Which is a fair question, you know. That's what I do, is I have to have other things that I'm pretty deep into. And man, he's like, yeah, just don't get burned out. Just love drums. I play drums every day. It's like,
he's that guy.
How the fuck do you do? Like, you're really good. And I see, like, it's clear. You play drums every day.
Right. It's that guy.
Yeah. And I like to play a lot of drums, but man, when I was younger, that was more a thing where I had a room away from the house that I paid for that I would just go in. And I had buddies that would bring drum sets and we'd shed together. And
totally. No, that's the refrigerator's acting up. I just got out. No, I totally understand. I understand. Like, but let's get into that for a minute because that's what I love to talk more about too, by the way, as you know. Mm-hmm. What are some of these other things we like to do?
Man.
If we can talk about it.
Yeah. So,
they might be
a few years before pandemic. It was golf, which has always kind of been, it was one of my first jobs. I was like I collected the balls and filled the divots and on a driving range. And like when middle school age was doing that whole thing and always worked some other job all through growing up. And I was a driving range player. I could hit pretty much every club, but I never went out and played a round of golf. Until early 20s, just got together with buddies and started playing. Anyways, 2-3 years before pandemic, it kind of dawned on us, hey, we should call some courses and ask them if we can trade tickets for greens fees. And it works everywhere. So that's what we do, is like every morning or maybe the night before, set up the thing for the next day. And we started playing golf, you know, 3 or 4 times a week. And, you know, got to where we're all hitting mid, low 80s. And,
you play with Evan Hutchings?
I haven't yet, but, but I should. No, there's so many drummers in town that talk about playing together. It's just easy. My clubs are on the bus, like, and it's kind of a chore for me to go get them, and it's, I needed another set.
Not the Ben Hogan's.
Yeah.
Break 2 more clubs and leave them alone. What movie? Can anyone do that? Can you do that?
No.
You're the only one here.
No, okay. I got.
You know, that doesn't ring a bell? Not the Ben Hogan's.
Oh, what?
Break 2 more clubs and leave them alone.
I don't know. What is it?
Drugstore Cowboy.
No. See, that's. What?
That was Matt Dillon and James Jamar, for those paying attention.
Oh, jeez.
To keep in score. Oh, we're good.
Yeah,
no. we're fast and furious here. We'll just come at you fast. I won't even know what hit you.
I'm usually good with the, you know.
The references.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you know, definitely. You're Sopranos. I'm not going
to. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was late to the Sopranos, though, too. I didn't really.
Oh,
I think I've seen the whole thing 3 or 4 times now.
I wish I could be new to it again.
Oh, man.
You know? So this kid's more fucking creative than Spielberg. Like,
dude, I mean, and I'm mid, or I guess I'm getting close to the end of it now, again. But I just, like, I'll just randomly start it again.
It's the best. And
Breaking Bad was a big one for me, too. Mm-hmm. I like that. It was good. I avoided Game of Thrones for a long time, but then I ended up watching that.
I've been avoiding, but who knows, you know? Who knows?
It just didn't seem like my thing, the... You know,
I wasn't a D&D guy, and I know
exactly. People,
but I've also had like Wolf used to say to me, like, he was like, he really pushed The Wire, and he even gave me his HBO password. There was a time where, and he was like, please, because he was like, please, just please watch it.
Yeah,
and I'd always start the first episode, and I was like, oh my god, this is so fucking boring, it's boring as shit. And everyone was like, no, you gotta stick with it.
Power through.
It was one of those, like, you gotta stick through the first three, and it was like, I don't got time.
Yeah.
Like, win me over with one.
Have you watched anything on Apple Plus or Apple TV Plus?
I don't think so.
There are a few good shows on there.
I don't think so.
They're good stuff. Yeah, man. Golf. Motorcycles.
That's right. We talked about that. Right. You ride. Before he rolled tape, he was saying.
And I even, you know, I would have ridden here today. But I just felt like that's such a fucking dickhead thing.
Really?
Like, I get nervous about that. I'm like, while I would have enjoyed a ride over here, because it's pretty close to the house, and I probably would have taken a long way back or whatever. It's like, what kind of dude does that? Where I don't know. I just feel like...
Interesting.
Like, you roll up like that, and he's going to be like, oh, okay. Like, I... I don't know why I feel that way.
If anything, I'm the guy that everyone, they think I am. You know what I mean? Like,
exactly.
I get that all the time. it's not even a question. It's, what do you ride?
Yeah, yeah. Do you at all?
No.
Really?
Because, never? I mean, well...
Oh, yeah. Right on.
Probably not a good idea.
Yeah?
With one eye.
No idea. None. Jesus.
Yeah. No, the listeners know.
That's
like,
a really cool trick.
Are like, wait, what?
That's a really... Yeah. Yeah, the
tech. Dude, I'm a blast. We go out. Like, I got bar tricks, bro. Yeah.
That's amazing.
Can you take it out? You know?
Yes. Yeah. Jesus.
Yeah, yeah.
Right on.
Yeah, so probably not a good idea.
Yeah, you know.
That doesn't work.
You got a lot of turning.
Driving in a car works, but I mean, on a bike, it's a whole different deal.
Oh, yeah. You don't want to.
I mean, if I stayed in the left lane.
Yeah.
But you can't really do that.
No.
Eventually, you got to exit, you know?
Yeah. I've done it a few times on the road now. I just, here recently I rented one and went around Lake Tahoe. It was
pretty
cool. Yeah. But yeah, it's a fun thing to, and it's another one of those things that, like, takes complete focus, or it should take complete focus, you know? And it's easy to just kind of get in that, you know, state.
Because you have to be there. Super
completely present. Yeah. You know? And what's cool about that is, like, even if I can just get out for 25 minutes and zip around real quick and come back to the house, it's a nice just little reset, you know? And I don't scream at the kid or the wife as much or whatever, you know?
Right. Right.
But yeah, I mean, it's cool. And it's a nice little, what's really cool is I've met other musicians in town that reached out to ride that I probably wouldn't have met outside of Facebook or what, you know, your Facebook friends, you barely know them, or Instagram or whatever, but they reached out because you ride, and I don't play in the same cliques as them, but now I'm, you know, I've gotten calls to go play with so-and-so because I rode with this guy. And that's so much of it. It's just like, oh, I've known some of these dudes for a couple of years now and hung out with them so much, never played any music with them.
It's funny how that works. I know, that's life too, isn't it? It's like...
It's good. I love it, man.
I know. It's interesting. You're right. It's like, even just, I remember, like, smoking cigarettes. I was like, that's how you meet people.
Yeah.
It's like, my advice to drummers is, like, learn to ride a fucking bike and smoke cigarettes. Like, take up smoking. And, like, you might meet someone.
I was joking with
standing out front, having a cigarette, and that's how you bond.
Yeah.
So I'm pushing hard the cigarettes on the kids today.
Uh-huh. Yeah. belly up to a bar, anything you can do. Smoke cigarettes.
Sling coke. I mean, just, you know, like, that's a good way to meet people.
Definitely.
Like, I got blow.
Yeah. Blows, man, that's so much scarier now than it used to be.
Well, back to Vinnie Paul. No, I'm just
Yeah.
He must have had the good shit just all around. Just like, what a life. What a life.
Yeah.
Right? Like, he a real rock star in Texas. Like, you know what I mean?
I
mean,
yeah.
Because he was the only game in town, right?
Yeah, really. Well, we were, you know.
Who else was a big star there, in other words? What I'm saying.
Nobody. I mean, in the, I worked in a music store in Garland that had in the early days, had like a guitar, like a drum off, but guitar off kind of thing. And the guy I worked for was this old man. And that, you know, you get him started on Pantera or Dimebag, and he just hated Dime. Because Dime would come in and win all these contests, and he was like, he's the most foul-mouthed young man I've ever met. Just used to crack me up, because, like, he had no choice but to give him all this free shit.
Yeah.
And they, I mean, yeah.
Brilliant.
But, yeah, they were the dudes. I mean, that's, and they were, and here recently we got to see the Stanley Cup. Some guys brought it out to the show that we played. And that was, one of the guys brought it up. Like, the big dent in the cup was from the Stars partying with Dime and Vinny. And it got chunked off of a balcony into their pool or some shit like that. And, I mean,
that's what I'm saying, bro.
How cool is that?
it just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Like, who's carrying the torch?
Yeah.
You know, of like,
man, who was it? Joe Walsh here recently.
Yeah.
They were talking to him about AI.
Yeah. Oh, I saw that. He can't destroy a hotel room.
Yeah.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, it's just over, man. That's kind of over, like, you know.
Eh?
To a degree.
Yeah.
I mean, I know, you're almost like, not fully, but like, you know.
It is, man. It is even
It throws
more
me,
now.
By the way, here's what, I was someone's off record the other day with a guy, the idea, like, because what throws me is, when you have like a Porcaro Gad, which I love, because like grandfatherly Gad now, that whole thing. Mm-hmm. Like, Grandpa Gad, he's like soft and cuddly, you know what I mean? And he's just like, hey, you know? And
yeah.
But like, that dude was, I mean, more blow than...
I want Coke Gad.
Dude, Cokey Gad.
Like,
and
that's what I'm saying.
And think of the shit he's
Lamage,
seen.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
just think of the shit him and Richard T got into. Like, just, you know, like, whoa. You know what I mean? Like, whoa. And
yeah, man.
Vinny, you know, the China Club, and how much blow. Like, just... the depravity, you know what I mean?
Dude.
And like Porcaro, so it's like, and it's interesting to me because it's like a type of brain or something, and I'm saying it just doesn't, how can that not exist, like that talent, and then guys who have that underbelly where it's like, let's go.
Yeah.
And they're just like, here's a bag, let's go, you know, like till the sun comes up, baby.
Yeah.
You know, and you don't, you just don't see it, and you get this whole other breed where it's like, yes, the equation, you know, and it's very, like, you know.
That's the, yeah.
And I know. I'm like, really? It just died? They're dinosaurs? It's extinct?
Yeah.
How could that be, though?
No. It's, I try to keep a portion of that alive.
I can see that about you. And
man, you know, Dustin, he's kind of built a career, and he's finding this niche now. We early on, we did a show in Mexico with Luke Bryan, and it's like his Crash My Playa thing that he does down there, and he's done it every year since. And we had a pool party scheduled to do. We had done a show, this is the first year we've done this festival. We had a show the night before, and we were just there as like an acoustic thing. It was me, a guitar player, and Dustin. We got hammered the night before because we were in Mexico, and, you know. We wake up and we've got to do this pool party. And Dustin sends me a text. He's like, come to my room. All right. So you go over there and he just has like coffee cups lined up and a fucking bottle of rum. And he just starts pouring them up, like filled the coffee cups. And he's like, we've got to do this. I'm like, all right. And man, it just turned into like the best show. It went on way longer than it should have. And then he ended up getting back the next year because they wanted him to do the same thing. And then it's turned into like this Dustin Lynch pool party thing that now he's kind of marketed, and now he does one in Vegas. He just did one now in Nashville, and he does it every year now in Mexico. And it's all based around, like, you know, when we're in legal places, I fucking spark joints on stage. Mm-hmm. We drink shots on stage. We rehearse for 2 months before we go out so we can do these shows just short of unconscious, you know?
Right.
And we, yeah, we're responsible about it, but it's like, we have a good time. We're not out there trying to just, you know, be assholes. But then we also have guys in the band that are sober. Completely cool with that. Do your thing, man. But we're going to be over here, you know? it's funny to, like, have marketed a vibe or just a party. It's like,
yeah.
And that's...
That works, though.
Yeah.
That's always worked. I mean, yeah. That was... Van Halen was the party. Like,
yeah.
That's like... I'm saying, Motley Crue is the old rock and roll thing.
Yeah.
It's a party. Come on down.
Oh, we had our keyboard player in the early days walked into a hotel room. This is the funniest thing I've ever seen. Walked into a hotel room, drunk, grabs this big remote control, overhand chunks it directly into the middle of the TV and shatters it. No expression on his face, walks over to the phone, dials the front desk. Something's wrong with the TV. And it's like, little moments like that, I'm just like, yes,
right.
It's not dead yet.
Now I understand why you were like, no.
Yeah.
Bro, it's alive and well. Come on out with me sometime.
You should come out for sure.
Oh, I...
Next time.
Now I need to.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun.
Dude, you're keeping the Vinnie Paul spirit alive. I see that.
Yeah.
Fuck yeah, dude. See, that... If anyone's wondering, like, why'd you move to Texas? No. Telling you, man.
Yeah. I mean...
Texans know what's up.
Yeah. Yeah.
There's something.
It's a good time.
There's something there.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean,
you know. I miss it. I do miss Texas from time to time.
But it's going all right here. You know. Yeah.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
Man, I gotta say this. So my wife, it was my 40th this last December.
December what?
First. Mm-hmm. She gets this idea that she wanted to have Vinny call me. And I don't know, she starts calling people. She was a singer as well. She grew up doing cruise ships and like Six Flags, did like shows, you know, like reviews, that kind of thing. And so she has some connections too. We have a bunch of mutual friends. She reached out to some people. Nothing really panned out. She ended up just going to his website and hitting him up. And the dude responded. And motherfucker called me. On the phone.
Vinny.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and it was a few days late, and I didn't, because like my birthday had come and gone, and she ended up telling me, because it was going to be a surprise, and she was like, I figure he's just not going
to
do it.
Also, so, how you have to be sure you answer.
Well, think. Yeah.
That's also key.
Yeah.
That's fucking key.
And she was, she was like, hey, I don't think it's going to happen, but like, you know, I tried to make this happen for you, and you
so
know.
How does that work? You just get to do? Is it just come in? Like, what are you doing when that? How did that work out?
I was just at the house.
It just worked out.
I got a unavailable, you know, number, and I was like,
Wait, hold on. Is this like one of those cameo things? Did she have to pay, or was this?
No, man. She
it
just,
was just a favor. He did it as a favor, like a good deed.
He doesn't, and he made it very clear. He's like, I really don't do this sort of thing. He's like, but you know. You seem like good people, and I guess he went and looked at my Instagram or whatever.
Cool.
And had some like super nice things to say. And
so, man, you answer the phone. He's, hey,
dude.
Hey, this is Vinny. Wait, what does he say?
He says, "Well, better late than never." And I was like, "Man, is this who I think it is?" And he what did he say? He was like, "How's the drummer with the?" With the greasiest backbeat I've heard in a long time.
Nice.
And I was
nice.
Like, man, thank you so much. And man, we got to talk about stuff. And And he talked to me for like a little over an hour. And it was insane. I mean, just hearing, getting him. And he was laughing about it by the end of the phone call, because he's like, you definitely got me on this. Because, like, just hearing, I don't know if you've listened to any of his Breakfast with Vinny podcast things. And, yeah, man, I mean, he, you know, he just went on and on about the coolest shit. I mean, we talked about his, you know, recording career and just his philosophy on, like, playing in general. And how there is no such thing as a mistake when you're making music, you know, aside from trying to execute some specific written out thing that you need to do for a score or whatever. He's like, when you're just playing, does not apply. And he's like, it's, you know, you can't make a mistake. And it was just the coolest thing, man, hearing his thoughts on all that. And just, yeah, it was definitely surreal. Felt like a dream. I was probably just an asshole on the phone, just trying to, yeah, I mean, yeah, I thinking of all the things I would have asked him had I could, but yeah, man, it was really cool.
A very cool present.
Wife of the century for that. So
very cool.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, that was, I it just doesn't get any better than that for me. Cause he's like like my guy, you know,
that's the guy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In my mm-hmm. eyes.
It happened.
Yeah.
Now you just need to meet him in person.
Yeah. That'd be cool. That'd be cool. I've seen it. I got to see him live. I saw him with Herbie. So that was cool. But yeah, I mean, I didn't have parents that were like into like going and seeing real hit bands. Like it was more just like local country thing. And so I didn't get taken to a lot of like the local drum clinics in like the 80s, or, you know, I had to get to where I was like, you know, middle high school age before I could, yeah, you know, start to go out and see those sorts of things. So I kind of missed out on the Vinny era of his drum clinics and
right,
that sort of deal. But yeah, that his Modern Drummer Fest thing with Charisma was like up there for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, and recently got to record with David Garfield here in town.
Damn.
Which was like another one of those things where it's like, I don't know how it happened, but I'm super grateful to have been there for it. But yeah, man. Charisma is like, that band's up there for me.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah, I get, no, I was saying, like, you're all over the place. I know.
Yeah.
I get that. I mean, as one should be, though.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I definitely was like very into the idea of like being a chameleon, mm-hmm, and like, mm-hmm, trying to work as many weird gigs as you could, mm-hmm, did the progressive metal thing and then would take a jazz gig or, you know, whatever.
Can play a cumbia.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's just like everything.
Yeah.
Everything.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And try to do it authentically. And the only way to do that is to like legitimately be into every kind of music and love it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's something too, that like with country music, there's something to be said for like loving that and appreciating the finer points of doing that thing justice, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Has nothing to do with the country gig I'm on now, because it's not really what I grew up as thinking of country. Mm-hmm. It's just,
mm-hmm,
my focus is getting really big sounds on the gig. It's just weird, but yeah, it's, you know, you learn how to do that.
Best Texas Shuffles.
Oh, shit.
Throw some names at me.
I mean, Chris Layton. I'm going to say Jason Thomas. I mean, he's...
JT.
I mean, that guy... I mean, while Vinny's my guy, JT's like one of the most well-rounded drummers that we have around. Like, I mean, like, it's just... He has so much to say. Just his vocabulary, and then the main thing is his touch. And yeah, watching him play shuffle is insane. Like, his left hand is ridiculous. And the way he tunes his drums. It's all part of it, but, you know, I'm just a big fan. Big fan of that guy. And then, man, I don't know. It's a good question.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good. I mean, yeah. I guess Layton, Thomas.
Layton. A lot of the ZZ... Well, yeah, it's like the ZZ Top stuff, you know?
Mm-hmm. Frank Beard, baby.
Yeah, I mean...
There's a guy.
So, yeah.
Let's track him down, can we?
Did you watch... There's a...
No, I didn't.
They tell some stories on there.
I know. Talk about rock stars.
Yeah.
I know.
Uh-huh.
Oh, yeah, Frank Beard.
Yeah, that's a good one.
God. Yeah, Chris Layton said he was on the bus with him. He has his own bus, and he just watches golf.
Hmm.
So of course he does.
Yeah.
He's a fucking millionaire, like, living at the Double Cross Ranch or something. You know what I mean? Just like, that's what he does.
Yeah.
I love it. I love that shit, man.
I don't see all those guys... I mean, to even come out of that...
Yeah.
And have any kind of, like,
brain
left or, like, you know... That's what I've... The weird thing for me is being on the same gig for this long. And you do, like... You know, you played everywhere 4 or 5 times or whatever, you know. And it just... Like, I have no idea how other guys in the band would be like, oh, yeah, we were there in 2017. Like, how the fuck do you know that? Like, everything feels like Groundhog Day to me. And we don't... Yeah.
It's a blur. I know.
It's the weed, probably, but...
All right, my brother. I understand. I totally understand. We'll talk more about that in a minute. Thanks for coming over today, man. This was a pleasure. It's good to meet you, man.
Likewise.
Right on, man.